G'day, this is Tom Uren of Seriously Risky Business, and I'm here with The Gruck today, and we're going to talk about how Ukraine can make best use of the IT army. So a while ago, Gruck, I wrote a piece that said that it seemed like the Ukraine IT army was gradually taking this huge mass of people that they'd gathered who'd volunteered to do cybery things against Russia right at the beginning of the war. And I think it became quite huge, right? Hundreds of thousands of people?
Well, there were, So some of the interesting things about it is the dynamics of people involved, right? So you basically had the sympathizers period of the first 3 weeks where it really spiked. And then about mid-March onwards, people got bored and found something else to do.
Yeah. And the piece I wrote was there seemed like there was some evidence that they were, I guess, selecting people for higher and higher duties. And at the time, I speculated that, look, this is one way you might actually get something useful done out of the IT army, because mostly the actions have been pretty low level, like denial of service, defacements. And to be clear, I actually don't think the IT army is a particularly good idea. But for this podcast, we're going to explore how, what are the possibilities with it. And certainly, if I was in an existential war, I'd be trying to figure out exactly this question. You know, how do we take this goodwill and turn it into something useful?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to focus on one element of that right now. It's the how do you take this huge number of people who want to get stuck in and involved, and even if not making it useful, at least not making it detrimental to your own efforts? Because that's sort of been one of the issues that's come up, is that the cyber army has done, you know, as we were saying, like defacements, or they've done DDoS, or they've done other sort of inconsequential things. But in doing so, they have dramatically improved the security posture of Russia. So they have, they're like a horde of locusts that have eaten all of the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
So now that doesn't exist when, you know, the real operators show up. They have made people aware that, you know, security is an issue and they need to tighten up. They've done things like massive DDoSes, which have interfered with the links that are necessary to do operations. You know, like they are not an inconsequential, like the attacks are inconsequential, but the impact they have are not in terms of interference.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the positive effects are inconsequential, but the negative effects are significant. So it's...
yeah, very much so. And I think in a way, part of that comes to we sort of have this way of looking at cyber as being sort of isolated from everything else. It's its own thing. You know, it's not connected in the same way as like tanks or something like that. It's just, it's cyber, it's cool. Anyone can do it, you know? All you need is a laptop and an internet connection.
And you can rule the world.
Right. And the thing is, you lose the way that things have to be integrated into a strategic vision that are, you know, executed by a state for the state to achieve something, right? Like the state doesn't just go, all right, you guys just like cyber away for whatever.
You tank guys go wherever, and we'll fire our missiles wherever, and artillery is wherever.
Yeah, exactly. Like let the flyboys go and fly around, you know, like draw penises in the air or whatever it is that they do. And, you know, like you cannot do that. That's not how these things work. And so just like cyber, while it's something everyone could do, in theory, anyone can shoot a gun, right? But that doesn't make you a frontline soldier. Like you can't just... So like this is a thing that comes up a lot in interviews with people who have gone and volunteered for the front lines where they're actually fighting. They'll say, you know, this is not Call of Duty. Unless you have military experience, unless you know how to operate and participate in these things, do not come. Like you will get yourself killed, but you will get some of us killed as well. Like we don't want just randos showing up and dicking around. And I think some of that mentality applies to cyber as well, in that like they don't want just random people showing up and hacking things because they can.
Well, even like really good skilled people turning up and just hacking randomly is a problem, right?
Right. Slightly less so, but yeah, I mean, the point is, in this case, I guess, not so much the skill, is that when you show up and you join one of these like foreign units, you join a unit that's under a Ukrainian commander who is doing what is being directed to by like the command structure as part of their strategic vision. You don't just take a gun, wander around until you find the front line and start shooting at things, right?
Okay, so in the case of the IT army, then it sounds like what you need to get done is build a hierarchy that you can integrate people into. There, job done.
Boom, done. Okay, we've solved it. But so I think the next thing that comes across is that when you're looking at the value of cyber, we can sort of think that there's sort of three broad categories, right? You've got your espionage, which doesn't get a lot of press coverage, but it's actually very valuable when you're fighting a war. You've got your information operations, which don't necessarily need offensive cyber capabilities. You know, like that's a lot more graphic design or websites or just regular writing copy, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got your effects operations, you know, like these things that look cool, like playing the Ukrainian national anthem over hacked IP cameras in Moscow.
Yep, that's a thing that happened.
It is a thing that happened. It's a thing that's cool. Like that's, you know, obviously involved skill. It didn't end the war, you know.
Well, so, I mean, this is exactly what I thought. Like, this is cool, but what does it actually achieve? And I mean, it got some publicity.
Right. So I think I've touched on it a bit, but part of the issue here, right? So as I was saying, you know, we've got espionage, info, and effects. Part of the issue is, as an independent operator, you cannot really do espionage operations, right? Like, you can steal information.
That's right. But who do you tell?
Right. And if you do tell, how can they trust that you are giving them legitimate stuff, right?
How do you know what to steal?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if you are the intelligence services, you cannot go out and be like, hi, random person, here is something that we do not know that we want to know, because obviously that's a security problem. Like, you cannot give tasking to random people, particularly when it's a Telegram channel of 300,000, you know.
Yeah, you know. So that's I guess what I was speculating in my piece, that they have, mm-hmm. As time goes on, some way of determining who's actually competent and who maybe over time they build some sort of trust in, and that maybe mm-hmm. they have a series of escalating challenges. And I mean, to me, that all sounds like perhaps too much work to actually do in the middle of a war, but it's, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's worth...
It has this feeling of like there's some value there. Like 300,000 people is 300,000 people. One feels like there must be a way of harnessing and leveraging that somehow. Like, there's got to be at least two or three good hackers in there. There's got to be something that you could do with that many people who want to help. I will admit that I do not know how you would use 300,000 people who, you know, just want to help in a generic way.
So I've got an answer for you. And my answer would be, if I'm the head of, well, put this in an Australian context, because that's where I'm from. And if I'm the head of ASD and we actually get attacked by some other country and we all of a sudden have hundreds of thousands of volunteers, what I'd do is I'd say to someone I trust in my organization, you go away and figure out what to do.
And I think
you've got a good leader who believes in the possibility.
Right.
And then it's entirely up to that individual who you choose, because I think you'd be constrained in the amount of people you can choose, right? I'm not going to get 15 people working. I'm going to take one good person who I can think I can spare, see what you can make of this.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to it. It's that you have so many resources available to you. You're in the middle of a war. Who do you want to go and babysit, you know, on the off chance that there's something useful that comes out of it, when instead you could probably use them to, you know, fight one of the 15 different fires that you have right now? And I think that's part of it. But the other thing is, like, these are government organizations. They have bureaucratic processes for how they work with the public. And the intelligence services, by and large, do not work with the public. the way that the intelligence services act with the public is recruiting them to be assets. Like that's their primary, you know.
Well, give them a job and indoctrinate them.
Right. They don't just go out and be 300,000 people, you know, come and hang out. We've got some ideas, you know. Like, it's just not a thing that happens. We're a bit blinded by like, it's cyber. Like, we understand cyber. People can do cyber. You know, we've got special set of skills. We feel like, as people who know cyber, we could contribute in some way. Therefore, the intelligence services would see that and want to take advantage of this. And, you know, that would be the smart thing to do. But if you think about it, it's a lot like going to, like, the Department of Motor Vehicles and having a whole bunch of people who want to, like, volunteer to ticket cars for parking violations. You know, it's not a thing that as an agency they're set up to accommodate. They can't just go Monday, nothing happens. Tuesday, here's 300,000 people who want to give tickets.
They're
just going to do it anyway, right?
Yeah, like I 100% agree about the culture of bureaucracies. But having said that, I think it often comes down to the person or to specific people and whether they've got vision or not. So in the example where I was the head of ASD...
You have vision, is what you're saying.
I have vision, and I can afford one person. And one of the good bosses I had in there, I went up to her one day and I said, I want to try doing this thing. And she said, what are you going to get out of it? And that's the typical answer. Like, what are you going to get out of it? How much is it going to cost? And I said, I don't know, but I'm sure it's going to be good. And she said, yes. So I think there are those people in those organizations who are willing to take a risk. And perhaps under the stress of war, you know, maybe that risk
is
worth taking.
You're right.
Yeah.
I was going to follow up and be like, so, and a couple of years later, the Seriously Risky Business podcast was born. And
that's right. After I'd been fired.
I don't know what's going to come out of it, but it's something good. I quit.
Yeah, she was a good boss. The others I've had were also good, but in a very public service way, in that it was all about, and I think this speaks to the culture of bureaucracies, it was the jobs always had to be bounded. Mm-hmm. And if you could reduce the scope, that was far better than anything else.
Yeah. So to a degree, like we're hitting on it, that there's like there is a way to do it. It would take, you know, someone with a vision or a person of the people who is able to sort of figure out this is a thing that we can use. We just need to figure out how to use it. I will put someone on that and whatever. As I was saying, like one of the things I was kind of getting at is espionage is quite difficult to do with a bunch of random people. Information operations, right? Information operations is different, but you also don't need them as part of your cyber force. Like you need, you know, your PR guys, you need graphic designers. They can work. And there actually is, I think it's called the Internet Force. There is this information op group that is helping the Ukrainians, but it's much more tightly integrated. They're a shut down, closed group. You don't just show up and do whatever because they want to know, like, what skills do you bring? How can we use you? And as far as I understand, they're more of a like an advertising or a marketing agency that's doing pro bono work for the Ukrainians. So they'll be given, you know, like, here's a campaign we want to run, and then they will execute it. They're not just, you know, making things to make things.
So they get specific tasking, I guess, is
right. So they're actually integrated into the organizational structure in a way, and that, you know, they do get tasking.
Yeah, and I guess in that case, because you don't care about the secrecy, that's fine.
Absolutely. You know, it's the sort of thing where you would be happy to contract an external agency to do it anyway. So here's one doing it for free.
Yep.
You know, that's basically it. That's fine.
For free and with passion, so they probably do a better job in as well.
More than free, I mean, they're committed, they have the vision, you know, they'll go the extra mile. If they see a way to improve it, they will, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the same thing that you just give to, you know, a marketing group somewhere. That's not espionage, right? Like, you can't be like, you know, we're looking for a passionate, you know, really driven individual that we're going to tell a lot of secrets to, and then he's going to steal secrets for us. And pseudonyms preferred, you know, anyone anonymous, you know, We like that. It shows that you value secrecy, which is what we value as well. You know, like that sort of like that sort of thing. So what you're left with is basically effects operations, right? Like, because that's less. It doesn't need to be months in advance, like espionage might be. So the secrecy doesn't matter as much. It's things that people can sort of do, like it's sort of just flashy stuff. You could give them tasking like an hour before it's necessary and have it happen, and that wouldn't be a huge deal. But effects operations tend to be, this is a broad generalization, the least strategic and the most tactical, right? Like you want to take down the telephone network just before an attack because that's when it would be useful. Like you don't want to take it down for an hour on a Thursday because that's not a useful thing that advances you in any way. And I think this is sort of a bit of the problem, is that the value that they bring is not the most useful thing for cyber, because these effects tend to be very limited in duration, whereas espionage is a lot more valuable for fighting a war that is obviously going the distance at this point.
Yeah, so that sort of leaves the, you know, from a Ukrainian point of view, let's just imagine that someone there has vision and they want to make use of the IT army, and it just becomes quite difficult to get them, I guess, inside the tent. So the effects operations, you've mentioned the playing the anthem on surveillance cameras. And then I guess the other one that was just recently was the taxis, where a whole lot of taxis got called to a particular square in Moscow. I don't know if that was an IT army operation,
right,
though.
So here's the thing. As far as I know, that was not IT army. So when you mentioned like sort of highly skilled people participating, there actually are. I don't know if this particular operation was one of them, but a lot of the stuff that's gone to DDoS secrets, for example, has clearly come from people who know how to hack. There have been other things that might not have been as publicized, but there have been actual operations done. But again, they have not been as much espionage focused for all the reasons that we've gone over.
Yeah, well, ending up on DDoS secrets, like, it's probably just a straight fail, right? Because from an espionage point of view, if there was anything of use there,
it's burnt.
And I mean, who's got the time, right? With specific tasking, you would pull out that needle from the haystack right at the beginning rather than pulling the whole haystack.
Right, and then going, there may or may not be a needle.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck. Like, who is going to go through the terabytes of junk that has been exfiltrated from like 60 different organizations or whatever? Some of the other stuff is, I do want to point out that there is espionage that does happen that is useful, but it's very tactical, in that you will see that there's people on the ground who will find out where a barracks is, and there's a channel to feed that information in. And, you know, the army will target it if it's correct. So you could find out where a barracks is, or you could find the position of a tank. You know, these...
So that's like kind of leveraging the OSINT or...
Exactly. And some of the people doing that will use cyber as a means of collecting that information. But it's very limited and tactical. And it's the sort of information that when it gets fed in, it's a hint that the army will verify. You know, that's it. It's something that the army will go, okay, well, let's focus our sensors on this area. And if it's true, then, you know, we will do our thing. And if it's not true, then we've lost nothing, really, in the grand scheme of things, particularly if they've got enough true hits that they're willing to accept.
From a Ukrainian point of view, I could see that you could use that at times, but it's also, I would be hesitant to use it for the most important things, because you're really telling however many hundreds of thousands of people we're interested in this, whatever it is.
Right.
And so, you know, that's basically surely telling the Russians, right?
Right. So my understanding is that the way that it works is there's essentially like a submission channel that you can drop information in and someone will look at it. That's it.
Right.
So if you go out in your walk, you know, and you go, oh my God, there's a bunch of tanks here.
Oh, okay. So it's totally a black hole. It's not a...
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have a tasking element where they say we're interested in...
Nothing at all.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Right. I mean, from what I know, the tasking is sort of the, like common sense, we're looking for Russian targets. Nothing specific. So like there is some espionage, but it's again, it's very tactical. It's not tasked. It's
situational awareness.
Yeah, yeah. So the organizational difficulties of bringing in a bunch of civilians to help as volunteers. There's the practical, or like there's the security difficulties of bringing in a bunch of people who, you know, at least some of them are the enemy who are just doing their own espionage. So there's the security side, which makes it very hard to sort of integrate in a proper way. And then I think there's just the things that you can actually do with them are not necessarily the most useful things that you could do. If you have access to something, having someone who's really good at defacing it is not necessarily the best use of that server that you've got access to, right? So if, you know, someone who can deploy wipers for you inside somewhere, like that might be great, but maybe you don't want to deploy wipers. Maybe you just want to stay there and monitor what's going on because you need to know that information.
One thing, I can't remember what report I saw it in. They had a timeline of the Ukraine war and the type of incident, the type of cyber incident. So very early on, there were a lot of wipers, but they gradually decreased. And that totally makes sense, sort of how you were describing. Like when you're at the beginning of a war, it's possible that disrupting some sort of IT system will actually get you an advantage on the ground. But the further you go into it, the more espionage and having a persistent access where you can steal information becomes more valuable. And so therefore, less wipers.
Yeah, no, and like that's absolutely what we've seen.
So earlier on, I said that the way I'd do it is I'd dedicate a person to figuring it out. But I suppose then I've just pushed the question down one further to my subordinate. And given that it's a war, I'm going to choose a grad who's just joined the organization, but I'm going to choose a good one, right? Yeah. So someone who...
Bright and spark.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'd let them figure out. And so, Gruck, you're the bright young spark now.
Okay.
So, what are you going to do?
All right. Okay, so I've been tasked. How am I going to get all of these people to help us? And
the 300,000 people in the IT army.
Boom.
How are you going to make use of them?
Okay, I've got it. Public-private partnership and information sharing. Done. Let's go down to the pub and have a pint.
So you've already given that example of information sharing where there's that Telegram channel black hole which just sucks up information.
Right. So I actually here's like, I'm joking, but I think that this is actually what would work. If the army, the IT army, was feeding more information about what they're doing and what they have done. So you can't task them with, we need to collect on these targets. They probably don't have the capability for that anyway. But if you know that they're going to be attacking somewhere, you could at least not waste your time doing operations in that area and be interfered with. Which, like, it's not a great thing. it reduces the pain a little bit. You know,
right.
So I know that the way that the army is structured now, there's this 25-man team that's sort of like their commanding group.
Yep.
But it's, as far as I know, all they do is they select which targets are going to be DDoSed. So like people who volunteer, right? Like people volunteer, they download this thing that they run, and then someone uploads a targeting list and it attacks them. And like that's sort of what they do now.
Yeah, so surely if I was that bright young spark, I would at least figure out, you know, who are a few people in that group that I can actually trust a little bit, I suppose, and perhaps try and get them to have a veto on particular targets that I actually do care about, something like that.
I'd do the same sort of thing. It'd be the if you talk to them, it would be to massage their target list a bit. We really hate bakeries. If you guys could just focus on bakeries, particularly in the Siberia regions.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, go and waste your packets over there and leave these places alone.
And what about talent identification? Do you think there's the opportunity to find a group of good people that you could put on something that's maybe not central or key, but it still would be valuable, but you just don't have the resources to get to? Like kind of a, some sort of secondary target that's valuable but not key.
Right. Here's a thought that I had is you'd sort of want, there'd be sort of like an auxiliary force, the sort of independent but slightly under control but doing their own thing. Having them as access brokers might be useful in that
right.
If the thing that they're good at is just going out and gaining access, that saves you a big step and can really speed things up for you. And so that could be useful. And if they're a plant by the enemy and they sort of feed you in a bad one, that's sort of part of the risk that you take anyway when you break into a place that you might be discovered. So it's not, you know, you would know to treat it as slightly suspect or whatever. So I think that that's a manageable risk, and that could be a way that you could actually use that sort of talent, is to say, to sort of, like you do talent spotting, you're filtering, and then you sort of get them this secondary, tertiary target list to just do access.
Yeah, and I wonder if you could just not even ask them to hack, but just ask them to go and try and buy credentials.
Yes, well, if you just have access and you don't care how, you know, like that would be, I think that would be useful, or it at least it could be useful. It's at least interesting, and I think would be worth exploring. So pro tip, any Ukrainian cyber commanders who are high enough up to pursue this idea, this one's for free.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a whole heap of Russian access brokers that sell Russian credentials and Russian information.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this weird feeling that they probably don't care that there's a war on as long as they can make money.
Yeah, so I guess one of the takeaways sort of from the IT army, let's not call it a fiasco, but the catastrophe or the event, is that a war is no place for a civilian volunteer, whether it is cyber or kinetic. It is a place that is not a game and just showing up because you want to do your part and your part is going to be some cyber thing. Don't do that. You know, if you want to donate, donate to charity, don't donate bandwidth.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Thanks a lot, Grak, for another great discussion.
As always, it's excellent talking to you.